Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Mo Ivory, and today on News One Now, black teenagers were thrown out of a neighborhood pool and totally mishandled by a white police officer. We're going to get you in shape with Cranked Up Cardio today on Fit, Live, Win. And also, we're going to meet Desmond Mason, a former NBA player who now paints art for George Clooney. And are sex and Chinese food causing you migraines? All of that and more coming up right now on News One Now. Over the weekend, I'm sure you've heard by now, a group of teenagers were thrown out of a neighborhood pool in McKinney, Texas, after reports of fighting. But when police arrived, things got really out of control. Officer Eric Casebold has been suspended after video surfaced of him mishandling and pulling out his gun on the teenagers. On the panel today, Aisha Callahan, editor at The Root. Also, Paris Denard, who is a communication strategist, and Michelle Hudgens, also a communication strategist. Welcome, everybody. Thank you. Okay, so I could not wait to talk about this. I mean, obviously, we all looked in horror as we saw not only the officer pull out his gun, at which point I saw the other officers come towards him like, what are you doing, man? But then when I saw the 15-year-old young lady in her bathing suit being manhandled, forget being a police officer, being manhandled by him, head on the ground, crying out for her mother, I just thought, okay, here we go again.
It was so many things wrong from beginning to end from this whole situation. And you could just see, you know, the kids were trying to behave. They were trying to follow direction. I mean, you know, it gets out of control sometimes, but this clearly was not a case where the force that he used was even remotely acceptable.
Well, it seems that there was an overreaction right from the beginning. When you even see the officer running and he falls, yeah. He's in such a rush like a war zone. What did you think about that, Paris?
It was sort of hilarious because I thought it was a joke when I first saw this. I was like, what is this officer doing? He falls over, he keeps running. And so right from the beginning, he escalated the incident with the aggressive nature of their approach. So you have to wonder what was told to them through dispatch, because it's important that we don't rush to judgment in these things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important for us to just state on the record, we appreciate the fact that there are police officers and our first offenders who respond and put their lives on the line for us no matter what the call. But that being said, you have to look at this case and say, was their response appropriate, respectful, and who were they protecting and serving?
Okay, so this is not an uncommon scenario, right? There's a pool party at a pool clubhouse attached to where many people live, and it gets out on Twitter, and maybe she was only gonna invite 15 teens, and before you know it, it's 150. I've been the parent who had to go pick up the teenager from that very pool party after I figured that there were 150 people there.
Right.
Not an uncommon, you know, occurrence in the summertime. Why did it become such a huge big deal?
You know, he probably became embarrassed after he fell, and you know, kids were probably laughing, so he became embarrassed.
Wow, I didn't think about
that. You know, and then that embarrassment turned into him reacting and going crazy.
Heightened authority
at
that point, right?
Exactly.
Well, but in another video that was just released, it shows that a white woman, a mother, actually confronted and had racial epithets towards a young black woman, and they actually got into a fight. And so they're saying, reports are saying, because this is all that just happened on Friday, reports are saying that incident, that fight, made the parents and people call in multiple times to the authorities and say there's an altercation occurring.
Okay.
So really it was between this older mother, this white woman, confronting and attacking and fighting with this young black girl.
Well, you saw this officer, there were a number of times where there were kids, you know, the young men were talking with another officer and he was like, okay, kids, it's not a problem, whatever. He's slamming kids to the ground. He's telling kids, move, get over there. Then he's saying, you know, they're sitting in the street because they're like, okay, we're going to behave. We're going to sit in the street. Then he tells them, get out the street. Then he puts them on the sidewalk. Like, there was clearly it was an erratic, over-emotional, adrenaline-charged situation that was not in control.
And, you know, we can, you know, there's no way to take this situation out of the situation that we are in nationally with the problem that is happening with so many communities and with police officers. For him to pull a gun out, it seemed that it was just his natural reaction. He saw two young African-American males and he just thought, I got to get this under control. Pull my gun. He didn't see a gun. He didn't see a knife. He didn't see anything that would cause him to feel his life was in danger, which is when you should be pulling out a gun.
Nor did he pull a taser. He didn't pull out his taser, which he had on. He pulled out the gun, which was his initial response, which goes back to a point that a lot of people make and I make, which is training. What is the proper response to people approaching you? Do you pull out your gun? Or what is the proper response to a young girl in a bikini and the use of force when she is not perceived to be a threat or having any weapons on her? It's
because
all about training.
She was already sitting on the ground.
She was complying, telling them to call her mom.
He pursued her.
Yes.
And brought her back.
There was another kid there, a white kid, that a news organization interviewed, and the white kid said they were only focusing on the black kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, and he was like, you know, he didn't understand like why they were just focusing on this group of black kids.
And he also said he felt invisible.
Yeah, he felt invisible.
I felt invisible, and he recorded this. And as you notice, he was not stopped. He was not told to go away, told to sit down or get the F out of here or go away. He was allowed to stand there and record, as well were the other older white gentlemen and some just.
Yeah, did you see the older white gentleman that was just standing there while the young girl was being taken down?
He was pushing kids out the way. Right. He was deputized in some ways, you know, in the way he was acting and responding. I think there were a few people, though we must acknowledge that there were a few people that were actually trying to do the right thing. There was a black male that was trying to defuse the situation with the kids, helping the young lady to calm down. There were a number of people that just said, you know, let's just get this under control because it was out of control. But at the end of the day, we're still talking about black kids who were not doing anything perceived as a threat, perceived as criminal.
I have to say that the first thing that came to my mind when I saw this was, you know, white privilege. I immediately felt like a white subdivision, you know, and there are some mixed families in there, but a predominantly white subdivision with a bunch of black kids coming to a pool party and, you know, people looking up from their window, like, what is happening here? And, you know, immediately calling, am I completely off by that? Or is that something that we can agree had to play a part in this?
Well, Ma, we don't know all the facts, so we can only go by what was stated. And the boy who recorded this, he stated that he thought it was a bunch of white parents who were upset of all the black kids being at this pool party that were invited or got out by Twitter. But there's another point I want to make is that we do have to respond appropriately to police officers and be respectful. And if we look at the video, there were some instances where there were some young black men who stood up and did exactly what the police officers told them to do. They sat down, they were respectful. They said, "Officer, we just got here. We were coming from a party." And he continued to berate them, but they still were respectful. So it's important in this whole video to zone in on the fact that there were these good young men who were respectful.
Wait, but with that part though, those two kids were on the ground. They were standing up talking to another officer when he yanked them to the ground, accused them of doing something of, you guys ran and now you're part of the situation.
Even with that, they still decided to, you know what, I'm gonna save my life. I'm gonna sit down.
But I totally hear where you're going with that, because it was really harassment even from the beginning as to how they got to the position of sitting on the ground. But it also bothers me that the one sort of really erratic officer wasn't sort of subdued by his own partners who thought his behavior was out of control.
And those are the good cops. Right. They sit back and let stuff like this happen.
Absolutely. So. Because I did see them come to him when he pulled the gun out and he immediately put it back because one of them touched his arm. Yeah. Like, and I wonder if that was because they knew he was being filmed or because he really thought, you shouldn't have your gun out right now, but it never went any further than that. That police officer should have gone back to his vehicle because he was the one that was out of control. Yeah. He was the one that could not put his skill and training into play. But it would take another police officer to tell him to do that in order for him to stop, and nobody did that.
He was in charge on that site because he was directing other people at other times. You can see when he was commanding people to do stuff and they did it. I think, again, at the end of the day, this is a situation, not even where cultural diversity or training beginning, but where we just have emotions that were just raw and too strong. He escalated that situation.
And that's when I laugh when people mention good cops. Okay,
right.
So where are these good cops that were there? Why didn't they stop the bad cops?
Sure, and so. I mean, this is, we're just gonna continue to see this kind of stuff. It's just another day in the neighborhood. So we'll keep up with this story, and we'll find out, you know, the facts as they continue to unfold. Spike Lee faces criticism over the title for his new film called Chirac. Cranked Up Cardio is the latest fitness craze out of Baltimore. That's today on Fit, Live, and Win. And are sex and wine causing you terrible migraines? Find out from the Urban House Call doctors. For more news and information, go to news1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Mo Ivory or on our News One Facebook page. It's 9 after the hour. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Film producer Spike Lee, known for such films as Do the Right Thing, Jungle Fever, and School Days, is causing an uproar in Chicago with his upcoming film, Chirac. Chirac is set to take place in the city of Inglewood on Chicago's South Side, known for its high poverty and violence rates. Some city leaders and residents are worried Spike's movie will give their city a bad name. Here's what Spike Lee had to say about it.
This is not a joke. This is not a game. This is real life and death. And that's the way we're gonna approach this. That's the way I've approached. Or, I mean, people acting like they've never seen none of my films.
Right.
Like, I just got pulled off the street. I've been doing this since 1986.
Right, right.
This is like a lot of, this is, in fact, everything I've done has led up to this film.
Still on the panel, Aisha Callahan, Paris Denard, and Michelle Hudgens. You know, when I hear, listen, we all have our, you know, good days with Spike Lee and our bad days with Spike Lee. Let's just say that. But I really do hear what he's saying, because, but on the flip side, I also understand the sensitivities of saying, putting a movie like that, half Chicago and Iraq, which makes it sound completely like a war zone. And, you know, I don't know, I'm a little bit 50-50 about it.
We didn't give Chicago that name.
Exactly.
People living in that area gave Chicago that name. And the same people who have issues with the name of this movie had issues with Do the Right Thing.
Sure.
You know, that was ahead of its time then, dealing with racial issues. And now, you know, you can't jump to conclusions about what the movie's gonna be about. He hasn't even released a plot of the movie.
Yeah.
He's not even said that's necessarily the title.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not a documentary. You know, it is a film. And you know, Spike Lee, he's known for this. I mean, the movie Crooklyn, for instance, that wasn't a movie that he came up with this name. That's what it was known as, Crooklyn. Mm-hmm. But if you watch the movie Crooklyn, it's not this negative, mean-spirited. It's a family movie. It's actually a very good movie. Mm-hmm. So I think that Spike Lee has an opportunity to highlight a situation. It might affect change, because the facts are, in Chicago, you can make the correlation between that and Iraq when you look at the money that goes in, the amount of violence that is there, and the lack of real leadership to correct some of these problems. But at the end of the day, again, we don't want to rush to judgment, and let's just trust Spike Lee to do the right thing.
No pun intended, of course.
But he does social commentary, and a lot of times, you know, his films, his stories, they do shed light on very critical issues. And, you know, the time period that he's talking about, it was, you know, over 4th of July weekend, there were, like, I think it was 52
murders,
shootings,
yeah,
and you know, so many deaths. And, you know, again, this is, it's based on, I think, the story, the classic Lysistrata. So it actually has some context for a grounding in what it's about. But then also, you know, none of his films that he's done haven't actually offered solutions, and also gives you more to think about, which is at the end of the day what he does as a filmmaker. We're again not talking about a documentary. We're not even talking about, you know, something that the city of Chicago is paying for. I think you have to leave room for people to shed light on situations. And sometimes when you shed light on a situation, that's when solutions come to it. So you can't be afraid of the truth.
Yeah, right? No, that's a very intelligent response. And, you know, the creative community would agree, you know, all the creative people are, you don't censor artists and what they do. And like Spike said, if you've seen any of his films in the past, you know that this is the avenue that he rolls on. But in talking about the city of Chicago, I mean, they do provide tax credits for people to come to their cities, just like any city does, in order to bring, you know, filming and the industry to the city. So there have been rumblings that they should take away the tax credits if he wants to use a title that, you know, the neighbors and the city council doesn't agree with. But you know, the truth is that every film director has to come into a city and deal with the powers that be right. when they're filming there. And there are concessions made all the time. Like, they will say, don't do this or don't use that, you know, street, or please don't. So, I mean, it wouldn't be, you know, sort of out of the realm of the creative space for him to try to figure out a compromise between the city council, the neighbors, and his, I'm not saying change the title, but I'm saying perhaps there is a forum, you know, to talk about the issues of Chirac.
It seems to me that the politicians, you know, the mayor and the city councilman,
they don't want to be put in a bad light.
Right, they don't want to put in a bad light. And when you expose this sign puts the target right on their back and says, what are you doing?
Right.
But this is free speech.
But
they have
it's
free
also
license.
An application process. Not all films that come to an area necessarily get the tax credit. You have to apply. You have to submit, you know, this is what my film is about. This is what we're planning on showing. So there were opportunities for them to put some parameters in place. But again, is the greatest concern you have right now the name of a film?
Exactly. Sure, in Chicago.
Right. That's focused on education or crime.
Well, I really think that there could be a, obviously, somebody has to do something that will make the politicians in Chicago do something differently.
Wake up.
And, wake up. And, you know, Spike is notorious for waking people up. And he's full of them today.
Right.
He's got, like, Spike Lee in his pocket. Spike, are you on the line? I think that perhaps a movie like this, if we go support it, because here is the other part of it.
Exactly.
There will be all this fuss, and Spike has had many a movie that we have not supported.
This was going to be online.
Okay.
This is going to be through Amazon and not like a theatrical release. So, you know, just hop on Amazon.
Do you think most will? Most definitely.
John Cusack, Samuel Jackson, Jennifer Hudson. There's so many. David Chappelle was recently added. There's so many names that attach to this. People will go and see it, which is the most important thing, because that's how conversations begin, which is what needs to happen for Chicago.
Yeah, I remember back when Do the Right Thing was going on, and I had just gotten out of college, and you know, I had my Do the Right Thing hat. I had my Do the Right Thing sweatshirt. It was all about Do the Right Thing. And I'm from New York, so many of those places were very familiar to me. And there was a bit of a movement from his movies. And we did even Malcolm X. I remember I read the autobiography after the movie. I hope that this does the same thing, because it doesn't seem like we have many filmmakers that are making communities move these days. And so I would love for that aren't about just plain police shootings. I mean, those movies seem to have brought that conversation forward. But I would love to see some attention paid to Chicago if this movie goes big. So if it happens and it's called Chirac, I hope people will watch it.
Yeah.
All right, thank you guys so much. Coming up, the founder of the fitness craze, Cranked Up, Jay Armstrong, joins us next. Jay Armstrong joins us next for Fit, Live, Win. And the Urban Household Doctors dish on which decadent treat actually stops migraines. Then meet Desmond Mason, an NBA basketball player turned artist. For more news and information, go to news1.com. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter, at Mo Ivory, or on our News 1 Facebook page. It's 21 after the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
So grown up. So ready to take on the world. I thought I was finished raising my baby. Turns out, I'm starting all over.
Though rare, meningococcal meningitis can destroy lives. In less than 24 hours, it can cause brain damage, lost limbs, even death. Even if your child already got a meningitis shot, teens need a second vaccination as early as age 16. They're still your babies. Give them a second shot to help keep them protected.
One of the cool perks of this place is you can eat as much cereal as you want. You can go to any line that's running and pull a box of cereal.
All righty.
We just like cereal. We make it, eat it, love it, live it.
Pizza.
There's a story behind my skin. My only makeup? True Match.
Only True Match has L'Oreal's technology to match your skin's unique tone and undertone. 100% guaranteed.
My skin, my story, my True Match.
From L'Oreal.
T-Rex, huh?
Yeah. Am I covered?
Of course. You've got mercury. We cover this.
Great.
And this.
And that.
Hey, not a scratch in here.
Yeah.
He's covered too.
Thanks.
We're on a mission to save you money. Mercury.
Sometimes your worst self is your best self.
My strong suspicion is we got the world we deserve.
This isn't me doing this. This isn't me.
This girl's gone missing. Nobody cares.
Marco Polo, Sacagawea, Ferdinand Magellan.
You have nothing in common with these brave souls, yet you're courageous nonetheless. You discover new cities and eat sandwiches. You go to 8 weddings a year and remember 5 of them. You even book hotels without knowing their exact name and save up to 60%. You can do it all because you're a slightly adventurous traveler.
Hotwire!
I was working in the yard. My chest started hurting, and I thought, well, you need to go to the doctor. I was told that it was cancer. And I called Cancer Treatment Center South America. Dr. Nader explained that they can pinpoint the treatment.
Once we identified that there was this genetic abnormality in her tumor, we were able to place her on very specific therapy.
Our individualized care model gives each lung patient specific treatment options with innovative procedures that are changing the way we fight lung cancer.
We have excellent technology that allow us to perform very specialized procedures for patients who have lung disease.
To learn more about these targeted therapies and advanced procedures for lung cancer, as well as the experienced physicians who deliver them, go to cancercenter.com.
When he showed me the CAT scans, I was so amazed.
With this treatment, she had a dramatic response.
Call or go to cancercenter.com. Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Care that never quits. Appointments available now.
Otis Redding, the king of soul, until one fateful decision would cost him his life. Get the untold story from those who knew him best. Unsung. Otis Redding, all new, Wednesday at 8 on TV One.
So today is Fit, Live, Win Monday, where we give you tips to get fit. Dr. Jay Armstrong has created the high-energy workout called Cranked Up Cardio. It's old-school dance moves to Baltimore club music. That's hot. She joins us today to show us how to be dope, D-O-P-E, with the development of personal empowerment through fitness approach. Okay, that's a mouthful. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm well.
Good. Okay, so what's the idea of the intense workout to Baltimore club music? That's pretty fun.
Yes, it started because I used to go to the clubs in Baltimore, and I mean, in college, I was real thin, simply because I would go every Friday night. As I got older and started, you know, having kids and stuff, I needed to find a way to start losing weight again. And through this, I've actually lost 51 pounds.
Wow.
And of course, with other formats. But because I love club music that much, I took it back to dance and making it available for people to not only do aerobic steps, but to crank it up and to really get their party on. So,
well, that's really awesome. So what is dope? Tell us about the concept of dope.
Okay. I go by the brand The Dopest Doctor. And again, it's to develop your personal empowerment. So everything is surrounding being dope, having a dope life, being addicted to life. So that way, you know, people have the opportunity to empower themselves. And it's a whole lot of people out here that can help with our empowerment. You know, we have coaches and we have, you know, even psychologists for mental empowerment, etc. But we also have to learn for ourselves how to be better. So that's what I want for other people. So you discover what you like, do what you love, and be forever dope.
Oh, I love that. She had to explain that, because if I told my girlfriends, come to the dope workout, they'd be like, what? That's not an invitation I want to go to. So, so just tell me about how you lost that much weight. You said that there were other things that you incorporated into it. Of course, we know you have to move. And we were just talking a little bit earlier, the ladies, where Paris doesn't have this problem, but we were talking about our arms on TV and how we like to go covered up. Because, you know, we as women, we have all these things that, you know, we want to work on specific parts of our body. But I mean, I got to be honest with you, I do not like working out. Yeah. And I every time I'm here for Mondays and have the Live Fit Win, you know, I talk about that. How do you get excited about working out?
Because I do what I love to do. And I've done other formats and I enjoyed it. But because this is personal to me, the background is personal to me, the history is personal to me, I enjoy doing it. So I have no problems, you know, getting up. Now, sometimes I'm not going to say I don't have my days where I'm like, okay, I don't feel like it.
Right.
But those times when I know not only will I be helping myself, I'm also helping other people, and they're excited about, you know, getting a workout in, that's what motivates me to do it.
So I noticed you have that gorgeous hat on.
Thank you.
But under your hat, I noticed you have a short haircut.
Yes.
And so did you cut your hair? Did you always have short hair, or did you cut your hair to sort of help you alleviate that whole hair issue around exercising? Because it's real, ladies.
Yeah. It's
right?
Real.
It's real. And I mean, I'll be the first to say, I will be a complete curly top when I work out, and it's just something I don't want to struggle through every day.
Yeah, I cut it because I wanted to go natural and try my hand at not using relaxers, but then it worked out because it's like, okay, pun intended. It worked out because I was able to just wash and go, and you know, when it gets sweaty, you wash it and you keep moving. So it worked out to be that way, but it wasn't the reason why I cut.
Okay, and so tell me about your eating habits around your dope workout, because you talked about dope meaning the entire lifestyle, dope for mental health, dope for working out, and also dope for, I guess, eating.
Yes.
So what have you done to help that situation? Because 51 pounds is a lot of weight to lose.
I had high blood pressure after having two babies. After I had my first child, it went down immediately. The second one, it persisted. So first they said I had to cut all sodium. Not saying I'm doing 100%. I'm going to be honest. I still eat.
Yeah.
But I had to make sure that my blood pressure got down because it was severe. I have great blood pressure levels now. I also have, you know, some intestinal issues. So I have to do for myself what's good as far as my eating habits. So I've cut out animal meat so far, which has actually helped me. So you have to really find the trial and error and what you need to do as far as your eating habits. I know this is something I still work on because I just love to eat. But also, I work out to supplement those times where I have those, you know, days that I want something extra. So,
right. Mm-hmm. The dope snacking, we call it.
Right.
So tell everybody where they can find you and your workout and the dope workout to Baltimore Club Music, because that's hot.
Absolutely. Thank you. June 28th and August 9th, I do parties. So we have the club atmosphere. I have a live DJ. DJ Booby is my partner DJ. I also work with DJ Rob Matt Flavor and DJ Droopy. And we create the club atmosphere all over again, except we're bringing the club to the fitness floor. So you can go to my website, www.crankedupcardio.com, and you're able to register to come to that event. It's in Baltimore. Both of them are in Baltimore currently, but we will come to your city. We have no problems doing that.
I love
that. So yeah, and also those events will are supporting the United Way of Central Maryland, because we are contributing to the Rebuild Baltimore project.
Well, that is absolutely wonderful. And that's more motivation for me and for you to get up and get into a dope workout and really just be dope all the way around. So thank you so much for that. Coming
up,
the Urban House Call doctors say put down that red wine. It may be actually causing your migraine. Plus, Desmond Mason shares his story of moving from a career in the NBA to being a successful artist. For more news and information, go to news1.com or hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Mo Ivory or on our News 1 Facebook page. It's 31 after the hour. We will be right back.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
36 million Americans suffer from migraine headaches, but there's a lot of confusion about the difference between a migraine and a run-of-the-mill headache. Roland recently sat down with Dr. Rob and Dr. Carla, the Urban House Call doctors, to define migraines and to identify the causes.
A migraine is a specific type of headache that really has some unique features, and that's why we really wanted to point out the difference, because so many of us have had headaches and we wonder, well, is this a migraine? Is this something more serious? But a migraine has some typical features, such as it's usually on one side of the head or the other. Okay, so it's very, very localized, as opposed to a band-like pain that many tension headache sufferers may get. Also, you tend to have what's called a prodrome, so there may be an illness before the migraine actually comes on. So some people actually notice they feel fatigued in the days leading up to a migraine. They may have cravings. They may be more irritable. So there's certain prodromes that you can also see with the migraine.
One of my sisters, I mean, suffered a horrible migraine as a kid. I mean, just debilitating.
Right.
So, and never really understood, really, what was the purpose behind it.
Yeah, and you know, it's still not very well understood. We do know that there are certain triggers, which we'll talk about, but as to what causes migraine, there's actually a lot of controversy and debate. And so what we really want to focus on is helping people identify if they're suffering from migraine, and then also potentially identify those things that they might be doing within their lifestyle or habits that might be contributing to their migraine headaches and the likelihood with which they get them.
So we, so when folks get a typical headache, sometimes, I mean, you hear this all the time because it's food they haven't eaten. Okay, first of all, is that an urban myth or is that real?
That's actually true.
Okay.
Fasting or going long periods of time without eating can trigger migraine.
Okay, all right then. And so let's talk about, so what are other migraine triggers? What also causes folks to have migraines? And again, is the migraine also a very sharp, intense pain? I mean, is it greater than a typical headache?
Well, you know, it can vary, and that's what makes it a little bit tricky in diagnosing migraine. Sometimes you can have the really intense, sharp, stabbing pain. Sometimes it can be a throbbing pain.
Because I remember Terrell Davis, who played for the Denver Broncos during the Super Bowl, he got migraines during the game, and I remember him going to the sideline. He said he couldn't see.
And that's actually key, and that's one of the other features of migraine that people might experience is that they have this visual aura, and it can range anywhere from seeing spots in their vision to seeing zigzag lines to sometimes actually having visual loss. And that's why it's really important that if you don't have a history of migraines and you have a headache with these features, that you seek medical attention, because what you want to make sure is that it's not anything more serious like a stroke or brain injury.
Role of sleep.
Yes, sleep is very, very important as it relates to preventing migraines. Studies show that lack of sleep is definitely a trigger for migraines, as is stress. So big, big, big problem that we see.
All right, so you talk about physical exertion. Is it working out? Is it, I guess, during the winter, folks shoveling snow? What role does that play?
Yeah, so actually physical exertion can be a precipitant of migraine headache, anything from exercise to actually sexual intercourse. Now, some might say the latter might be worth the headache, but the fact of the matter is it could bring
on
a migraine.
Sex causes a headache?
It can cause
a migraine.
Now, see, we're used to hearing that.
I thought it de-stresses. Okay, first of all, if you having sex and it's causing a headache, you ain't having good sex.
That
means you having stressful sex.
From a sex therapist himself.
I mean, if you getting a migraine from sex, you having stressed out sex.
I would say that's not how it's supposed to be.
Right.
But strangely enough, it does happen. About 5% of migraine sufferers experience sex as a trigger.
Any of y'all had that problem? Can you imagine? No, baby, no, can't have sex. I ain't trying to get a migraine.
It's a horrible existence.
That's gonna be a hell of a household right there.
You got it.
All right then. And again, food.
Yes, this is a huge issue, and a lot of people don't realize that certain lifestyle factors, the foods that they're eating, are triggering their migraines. So we've
got what kind of food? What we got?
We've got a few of the most common. One is actually red wine or alcohol.
Red wine triggers migraines?
It can trigger migraines.
Okay, I don't drink, but I swore this is supposed to calm you.
No, actually, the sulfites in the red wine tend to cause headaches, and it's actually the biggest migraine trigger that we know
red
associated
wine.
With food.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right, then.
The next one is sugar substitutes. So a lot of people think that they're doing good by themselves by not ingesting natural sugar. So they use, you know, these sugar substitutes. But in fact, there's a strong association between the use of these sugar substitutes and development of migraine headache, particularly in those who already have a history of migraine. So it might be best to just drink water or use, you know, fruit to flavor your water as opposed to using these sugar substitutes, which could, in fact, lead to a migraine headache.
All right. So what is this, a Chinese food container?
Oh, yes, and this hurts my heart, Roland. But yes, Chinese food has MSG in it.
Okay.
As well as the soy sauce, and this is a huge migraine.
And what is MSG?
MSG is monosodium glutamate, and it is a preservative that we find in foods, and it's very heavily used in the Chinese food industry, and it triggers migraines.
Gotcha. All right, well, look, I don't get migraines, so I'm good with the Chinese. All right, so what kind of sandwich is that?
So basically what we're representing here is just the cold cuts or the sandwich meat. The nitrates in this meat, similar to hot dogs and other meats that are packaged and preserved in this fashion, can actually trigger migraine headaches.
Okay, is it because it's cold?
No,
processed. It's the chemical that's in the meat used to process it, to keep it, to preserve it, that actually triggers the migraine headache. So whether it's cold, warm, you toast it, whatever the case may be, it still has those same chemicals in it that can lead to migraine headache.
All right, ice cream.
Now, this is actually a freebie because the studies show that actually ice cream can help abort a migraine headache. So when you first get that sign of migraine headache, if you eat a cold bowl of ice cream, it can actually stop it right in its tracks.
And the key is you really want to induce that ice cream headache that we've all had, where you drink something really cold fast and you kind of get that brain freeze. You want to induce that, because what that does is it supersedes the migraine, and then it basically, again, aborts the migraine, as Dr. Carla mentioned. And as we know, that's short-lived. That's much better than having a three-day headache. So
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rowan. Thanks for having
me. Folks, what can be done to alleviate migraines? Well, go to migraines website. It is Urban House Calls. For more information, just go to urbanhousecall.com. All right, back up with the News 1 Now in a moment.
Well, that certainly won't make me stop drinking red wine or giving up Chinese food, but it's good information to know if you are a migraine sufferer. I am not, thank God. So I will continue to have my red wine on a daily basis, because also there are studies that show that red wine is very healthy for you. So that information is good to know, and thank you so much. Coming up, meet Desmond Mason. He is a former NBA player who now paints art for George Clooney. He's up next. Plus, Jermaine Dupri weighs in on working with megastar Mariah Carey. For more news and information, go to news1.com. And you can hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at Mo Ivory or on our News 1 Facebook page. It's 42 after the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
So all the sports enthusiasts out there know the name Desmond Mason as a former Seattle Supersonics shooting guard. But art lovers know him from his paintings that have sold for up to, get this, $60,000. Desmond joins us now on Skype from Oklahoma City to let us in on his upcoming art show. Hi, Desmond.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay, let's take care of some quick business first. Are you for Cleveland or Golden State?
I'm for Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Moving
on.
So, okay, go ahead. Just a real quick thing of why.
I want to see LeBron win. I honestly want to see Dan Gilbert eat his words. That's more than anything. That's what I want to see. I want to see him come back home and win. Dan Gilbert can trash the email and they can stop burning jerseys in Cleveland.
Yeah, but you know what? You're a shooting guard. I mean, you must have some serious love for Stephen Curry's skills.
Oh, no. He's one of the most talented. Obviously, he's the MVP of the league, but incredibly talented guy. I played against his dad when his dad was in Toronto. So I definitely respect his game. But I want Cleveland to win just for that purpose. I don't really care Oklahoma City's out. So.
All right. Well, good. Well, let's get back to why we're here, and it's all about you. So tell us about when did you first get interested in art, and how you made such a transition from being an NBA basketball player to an artist?
I started painting and sculpting and doing pottery when I was 11 years old. And it was my days of skateboarding and doing all the crazy stuff to really keep myself out of trouble in my neighborhood. And then from there, progressed into high school classes and then on into college, Oklahoma State, where I was studying studio art. And more than anything, I wanted to be an art teacher. And I always say basketball got in the way for about 10 years. And doing my playing days in basketball, I opened up about my art, started having exhibitions. I would hire critics to come out and give me legitimate reads on my work, and they gave me good reviews. So from there, I just continued to do it all for charity. And once I was done and retired, I still do my charity thing as well artistically, but I've just kind of developed it more as a business, and I'm taking it very seriously. I consider myself a rookie in the art game. I do well in sales and travels and exhibitions, but I have a long way to go to reach my goal, and that's to be the NBA level of art internationally is my goal.
Wow, Desmond, that's awesome. So when you first made it into the NBA, did you always have this clear career goal for after you retired?
I did, yeah. I told my agent when I signed with him that I'll retire at age 32 regardless of the situation. And I was able to do that, exactly. I retired at 32. And from there, I just really got aggressive in art. And I knew it was going to be a little bit of a transition and a little bit of a struggle. And people questioned me. My agent was asking why. My dad was wondering why. Mm-hmm. Everybody was wondering why I retired so young, and I still had plenty of time to play. And I did it on my terms. But as anybody that really knows me, they knew basketball never defined me. Sports never defined me. And I was a little bit different. So, you know, I'm moving on to my next challenge, and it is a challenge, but I love the art world and everything about it. I'm a collector as well, not just an artist. I'm a collector and I study it. You know, I'm a student of what I do, just like basketball.
Wow, that's very impressive. Now, when did you know, I mean, the art world is a tough one. I mean, the odds of, you know, doing a piece and having it sell for that kind of money is just the same as, you know, making it into the NBA. You've done both. So how did you know you could actually make it as an artist and get paid?
You know, when I started having exhibitions, some of my first exhibitions, one, I was a realist. I knew that my platform gave me a good opportunity to get people in the door. It's just like having a good buddy that's the CEO of a company. You can get in the meeting, but once you get in the meeting, those guys don't play games, and you have to be prepared to present whatever it is you're presenting, and it has to be valid. You have to have the quality that they're looking for. And so that was art to me. Basketball was a platform. And once I was able to utilize the platform to get people in the door, I felt like my art would speak for itself. I got to the point where I started having exhibitions and people were paying $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 for a painting. And then I knew then it wasn't just because I played basketball. No one's going to continuously sure. pay that money for something because I played basketball. So I knew that they were liking what they saw. And I just wanted to make sure I evolve accordingly. So again, it was a vibe thing. It is, art is hard. You know, most artists are successful after they die, but nowadays, artists are taking it as a business, and you're starting to see successful living artists, which is my goal.
That's wonderful. So we know that some big names have bought some of your artwork. Tell us who got interested in you and how and who bought some of your work.
You know, again, I started having exhibitions everywhere. You know, I had exhibitions in Oklahoma City, Dallas. You know, I was doing shows in New York and group shows in L.A., you know, and then Cabo San Lucas, I ended up purchasing a home there 9 years ago, and the property evolved. And when it evolved, a lot of celebrities moved in. So my first show there was a charitable show because a kid had got paralyzed. So I did a show and donated all the proceeds. That's the show. Alex Rodriguez came to that show. Joe Buck came to that show. And then there's a lot of business guys. Rich Heiss, who funded Groupon. Duke Hansen, who started Crocs. George Strait. So these guys start coming to the shows and seeing my work. Well, from there it evolved to them starting to collect my work. And then one of the big ones was when George Clooney and Mike Melman, my friend who owns that property, and Randy Gerber, Cindy Crawford's husband, they actually started a tequila line. And with that line, I did a piece that was a realistic piece of that bottle. Well, you know, I end up giving, well, they end up getting a piece each one of those guys. Melman, Randy Gerber, and George Clooney end up getting those pieces, and they have them now. But from there, it's been collected quite often. Cindy and Randy were at my show here just December. I'm prepping to have a show in Rome, partnering with AS Roma. I'm working on Vladimir Vatutin to have a show in Moscow. I was just in Madrid. I was in Peru doing some children's orphanage paint work and just kind of clearing my mind. And now I'm back in my studio ready to work.
Desmond, do you, this is an amazing story. I have to say, I did not expect this all from this interview. This is an amazing story. Do you get a chance to go into the community and talk to young kids, being that, you know, they would want to hear what you have to say just because you played in the NBA, but then to tell this story about your dedication to your, you know, craft in art? Have you had a chance to do that?
Yeah, I do. I do it quite often. And that was my reason for going to Lima, Peru. You know, it's a really poor place and a lot of orphanages. And, you know, I realized that when I was in basketball, the NBA makes you do a lot of charitable things hands on. So you go to children's hospitals, you go to cancer research centers, you go and build parks and so on and so forth. But once I retired, those things weren't mandatory. It didn't mean I stepped out of community work. I started sitting on a lot of boards and they were utilizing my name to, you know, to get people to come in and donate. But I realized that all we're doing is setting up a bunch of galas so people have glasses of wine and sit around in nice suits, and they donate, but there's so much expense that none of the money ever actually goes to the cause. So I felt like I needed to get more hands-on, and so I decided to take a trip to Peru and just by myself and find some kids to paint with. I talk all the time in the United States to children about that. I utilize basketball as that platform, but more than anything, I talk to the adults and try to get them to realize the importance of art because it's getting cut out of most school systems first.
Yes, yes.
And so you got to get the adults to understand the impact of it,
and to be able to introduce it to the children. Absolutely,
absolutely.
So tell us, Desmond, where everybody can reach you and find out information about your upcoming show.
DMasonArt.com. I'm on social media. On Instagram, it's DMasonArt. Then also another Instagram is Be Different, which is obviously revolved around my artwork. Same thing on Twitter. Same thing on Facebook. Be Different on Facebook and Twitter. YouTube channel, all that stuff. My new art director is setting it all up, so I'm new to a bunch of it. But I'm getting ready to do shows in Vegas. I got a show with the Mandarin Oriental in Vegas, and then Dallas and Zaza in Houston. So I'm excited. It's a good time right now.
Desmond, thank you so much for joining
us.
I'm a fan now, and I'm going to check out all those websites and certainly try to get to one of your shows. Everybody, that's Desmond Mason, and his artwork is at any of those sites he just mentioned, and we should support him. And so thank you, Desmond. I'm Mo Ivory, and this is absolutely. I'm Mo Ivory, and this is News One Now. And we will be right back.
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hip Hollywood reporter Jasmine Simpkins caught up with entrepreneur and super producer Jermaine Dupri to discuss his work with Mariah Carey.
It's been 10 years since Jermaine Dupri produced Mariah Carey's smash hit, We Belong Together. The track, which ultimately revitalized Carey's career in 2005, went on to spend 14 weeks at number one on the Billboard chart. Hip Hollywood sat down with Dupri about his 20-plus years in the business and working with Carey, who in recent months has been highly scrutinized by the media for her lackluster vocals and performances.
Sometimes the media is a little too hard on Mariah, but at the same time, I think sometimes she has to pay attention to that and say, I'm gonna be 100 times more serious than I feel like being right now. Because when you've been in it this long, yeah, you wake up some mornings you don't feel like putting your all into something. You feel like just because you got a name, people gonna go with the flow. But the way the world is now, you know, people is like, they got something to say about everything. You know what I mean? So you just gotta be on your P's and Q's at all times.
And Dupri is taking his own advice. At 42 years old, the entrepreneur and mega producer is definitely showing no signs of slowing down. This fall, he'll drop a new EP and currently has a new single, Where You At, with his protege, Bow Wow.
I was like, well, Jermaine's always telling me, like, this what they want. I'm like, yo, we gotta give it to him. And it's just organic. You know what I mean? Like I said, I started off here. And, you know, we're going to end it here.
And if that's not enough, Dupri, who just extended his residency spinning at the Wynn in Las Vegas, is also releasing a new iPhone game based off his 1998 smash hit, Money Ain't a Thing.
I mean, I got a quest to beat Quincy Jones. And, you know, at 50, he made Thriller. So I'm not even there close to that. So, you know, I got a quest to beat him. That's my ultimate quest. If I can beat Quincy Jones, then I'm out. Just hey, I doubt if that would happen because he's incredible, but that's my ultimate quest.
Here's hoping. For HipHollywood.com and TV One, I'm Jasmine Simpkins.
It's birthday shout-out time. Yesterday, former NBA player Allen Iverson turned 40 years old. Singer Prince turned 57. Music executive L.A. Reid turned 59. And poet Nikki Giovanni turned 72. Today, rapper Kanye West turns 38. Actor Keenan Ivory Wayans turns 57. And actor Bernie Casey turns 76. Tomorrow, News One Now. The U.S. Black Chambers, Inc. has a new microloan program. You can follow me on Twitter, at Mo Ivory. Also, you can friend the show on News One's Facebook page. Be sure to go to newsone.com for more stories and updates. I'm Mo Ivory, and have a great evening.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.